during the Sfira, this time when we count the 7 weeks that we've been studying together from different points of view, there's an idea that if we work hard at it, think into it deeply, we could learn a dimension that we haven't seen before. And that's the idea of a level of growth that could take a person from the natural into the supernatural. The last few weeks we've studied together some of the ideas of personality development, ways you can work on yourself, control some aspects of personality. Let's see if we can look at a much deeper idea, which is the final level of transcendence from the natural to the supernatural. Now, that's a very heavy subject. It's not an easy subject to understand. It cannot be apprehended with the scientific or technical mind. It has to be grasped with a deeper consciousness. And the mystery is to try and understand how out of a natural system a person can reach a supernatural level. That's the difficulty. What has counting the days from Pesach to Shavuos, what does counting 49 days have to do with reaching a level that's a transcendent level, that which we call Torah, Shavuos, where a person lifts out of the 49th finite stage into the 50th, which we don't count. We don't count it because it's not a detail that can be counted. It's a completely transcendent idea. We call it the 50th, but we don't mean 50 as opposed to 49 or 48. We mean that which is outside of all counting. How is it that counting gets you beyond counting? That's the problem. In broader terms, how is it that the practical, finite, physical world can be a springboard to get a person into the transcendent? That's the problem we wish to understand. At least some aspect of that. We're not a system. Yiddishkeit, Torah, is not a system that says to a person that he should meditate or transcend and leave behind the physical. That's not the idea. The idea is that by using the physical correctly, as we've discussed many times together, by descending into the physical and using each piece of the sequence of how the physical world is constructed, that's the mechanism for transcending. Now that's a difficult idea. Let's see if we can maybe put together some of the idea. Many of these elements may be unfamiliar to many of us. See what we can put together. Let's start maybe like this. Many places you can start. Let's maybe start with the following amazing observation. This mitzvah of counting the sphera, when you come to Pesach, you start counting 49 days. 49 days later, when you've created that system of 49, then you transcend, you get to Shavuos, which is Torah, which is a completely different world. Now, we know that all mitzvahs fall into two categories, positive and negative mitzvahs. Negative mitzvahs are those things you may not do. Positive mitzvahs are the things you must do. But positive mitzvahs fall into two categories again. I'm sure you're aware of this. Those are mitzvahs that are determined by time and mitzvahs that have no time in it. What's called, you have a mitzvah esei shazman groma. That means a positive mitzvah that the time causes. That means that the element of time causes the mitzvah. On this and this day, or at this and this time, you have to do this mitzvah. The time is that mystical woman, as we said before. Time is woman's dimension. It's that mystical female dimension that has an inbuilt sense of rhythm or sense of time. And it's that which triggers the next event. In fact, there are those mystical commentaries who say that the reason that women don't have to do those mitzvahs is because they have completed that dimension already. Since they resonate with time, even their bodies manifest a resonance of time, which men don't do, so they already have that element built into them. And in fact, the law is that women have to do all the same mitzvahs as men do, except for those. That means all negative mitzvahs, women are commanded exactly the same as men, with the same penalties, the same punishments, same rewards. And all negative mitzvahs and all positive mitzvahs, women also have to do, except for those that are defined by time. When the Torah says that this and this mitzvah must be done at this particular time, in fact, it's not just done at the time. The Kabbalistic understanding is that the time causes the mitzvah to be done. It's called the mitzvah esei shazman groma. That means that the time causes. The time causes this mitzvah to be an obligation now. Women don't have to do that group of mitzvahs. That particular group can if they want. But they're not obliged to because they don't need to be locked into that dimension. However, that's the background. But the thing that's fascinating is to know this. So what do we have? We have that you have two groups of mitzvahs, positive and negative. The positive mitzvahs that you have to do have some that are defined by time, demanded by time, and some that are have nothing to do with time. Now the question is, what about the mitzvah Sfiras HaOmer? Counting the Omer, that we start from Pesach to Shavuos, has to be done from the second night of Pesach, from the day after Pesach, and has to continue for 49 days, so 7 times, 7 weeks, and it ends at, if there's any mitzvah that's defined by time, surely that's it. It is a mitzvah of time, right? It is a mitzvah of time, and it has to be done very specifically at a very special time. There's everything about it is time. It has to be done from a certain day, and it has to be done at a certain time of day. It has to be done as soon as the day begins. At night, when the sun goes down, as soon as the sun's down, we count the Omer. So there's a fantastic debate or question asked by many of the Achrayim, which is this. The Ramban, great Rishon, you look in the Gemara that talks about this, you'll see the Ramban says that Sfiras HaOmer is not a mitzvah Shazman Groman. You hear that? He says that it's not a mitzvah Esei Shazman Groman. So try and understand it. That means, the Ramban is telling you that the positive mitzvah to count the Omer has got nothing to do with time. You hear that? It means, it's counted among the... Of course, it would mean that women have to do it, if you follow that opinion. I'm not saying that's the majority opinion. We don't follow that. But there's an opinion by the great Ramban of cosmic greatness. We can't begin to understand the greatness of a Rishon, who says that the mitzvah of counting the Omer has got nothing to do with time. It's not a mitzvah to Esei Shazman Groman. Now that is very, very challenging problem to understand. The commentaries who talk about that Ramban are amazed by it. Just to look at that Ramban is very amazing. How can you take a mitzvah that's done at a certain time, defined by the time, stretches through time, creates time? It is only a time defined, time bound mitzvah, and the Ramban says not a time, it's not a mitzvah Esei Shazman Groman. That's the problem, that's the question. See if we can think into this problem a little bit this evening and try and understand it. I heard these ideas from a very great man. See if we can just try and take a few words that he said and make them clear. Let's try a pathway of getting to this idea. This evening we're talking about deep things, and we're not talking about the practical necessarily, immediate practical things we've been speaking about up to now. I'm trying to look at a deeper level. There's a Mishnah in Adiyah says like this. The Mishnah says that there's certain things that take a certain amount of time. The Mishnah lists a certain number of things that take a certain amount of time. So Rabbi Akiva says, there are a number of things here that are listed in the name of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, among others, he says this, that there are five things that take a year. Understand this. Chamisha Dvorim, there are five things shall do by Israelish. There are five things that take 12 months. Mishpat, Dora Mabul, the generation of the flood. Shnei Masachedesh, 12 months. Mishpat Ioiv, the suffering of Ioiv, Job, Shnei Masachedesh. Mishpat Hamitzrim, Shnei Masachedesh, the judgment of the Egyptians, the plagues that they were tested by. Mishpat Goyim Magoyim, the Asid Lavoy, in the future, the war that will be between the Jewish people and the non-Jewish nations will come against us. The war of Gog and Magog, that will take 12 months also. And then he says this, Mishpat Rishoyim Begehenim Yud Beis. The time that people have to suffer in the next world, in that dimension of non-existence, or that dimension of consciousness of non-existence, which we call Gehenna, that place of pain, that takes 12 months. And as you well know, we say Kaddish for a person for 12 months, because actually we say for 11 months, because we don't give anybody the discredit that they need the full 12, but the idea is, that's only our kindness that we pull them out early, as it were, through our intention. But the point is that, classically, they spend 12 months in that world. What months are in that world is hard for us to understand, because it's a dimension that doesn't have time the way we have time. It's a transcendent dimension, doesn't have physical change like we do, and therefore what time means is a difficult idea. But nevertheless, some spiritual equivalent of 12 months is what a person who deserves the full punishment, in other words, the full suffering of facing up to the consequences of what they did here, which was all negative, or largely negative, such a person has to go through 12 months in that dimension of having to work out or come face to face with all the negativity that the person generated in themselves. That experience of suffering, that pain for 12 months, that works out a person's problems. A person generates the sensitivity through pain that they should have got through hard work here. And that corrects the neshama. The person after that is cleansed, let's say. Why? Where did he get this from, Rabbi Akiva? That it takes 12 months? Because it says, Shenema, says in the Pasuk at the end of Yeshaya, it says, and it was from, let's say, monthly. That's what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says, and it will be, actually, the whole Pasuk says, doesn't call it here, the Mishnah, but the Pasuk is, Bahayo Midei Chodesh B'Chodesho, that means, and it will be on a monthly basis, and very hard to translate these words, Umidei Shabbat B'Shabbato, and from Shabbat to Shabbat, that means, and on a weekly basis, whatever, I don't know how to translate these words, it means, because of the months and because of the weeks, I think it says, V'yavoy kol baso v'shtachavot l'fanai Nuh Hashem, if I remember correctly. The Pasuk says that all flesh will end up bowing before me. That means all flesh will come to bow, acknowledge, make itself subservient to me, is what Hashem says. So let's try and understand this verse. You can look it up yourself. It's in Isaiah, the end of Yeshaya, Samach Vav. Says this, that, and it will be that from month to month, or monthly, or something to do with months, from one month to another month, is very impossible in English to translate these words, but something to do with one month that brings to another month, and from one Shabbos that brings to another Shabbos, so that will be the cause that all flesh will bow in front of me. Now, before we try and take it apart here, let's just understand one or two general things. First of all, you know when it says flesh, whenever the Pasuk says, not poetic, when the Torah says, Yavoy kol basar, it means that all flesh will come. So the commentaries say that it means the lowest part of the human level. Flesh always means the flesh, it means basar. The Gemara says in one place that basar, literally if you really want to hear it properly in English, it's meat. That's what it is. All meat will come to bow before me. That's what a person is. That's what a person really is. In fact, the Gemara in one place says that basar is notrikon. Notrikon means an acronym, or if you like, the initials, or the code word for three other words. Basar, srucha, rima, which means meat, rotting, and worms. That's what meat means. That's what flesh means. So the Gemara says like this. It means that what the Gemara is saying, what the Pasuk is saying, is that at the end of time, when all humanity comes to acknowledge the spiritual world, so then even the level that we call flesh will see it. It will not be that the highest level of humanity, or the highest level of each individual, will perceive something transcendent. That of course will be. But the chiddush of it is that even the meat dimension, even the flesh dimension that can't feel anything spiritual, even that will come to a level that will have spiritual understanding. So again, what do we say here? That at the end of time, when the spiritual revelation is cleared, when there's no more suffering in the next world, let's put it that way, when everything's been worked out in the next world the way it should be, so then there will be a subservience, an obeisance, whatever you want to call it, that the human dimension will all be tuned into the spiritual dimension without any facade, any mask in between. That's what it says. Even the lowest level, we completely. Of course, the Gemara learns, these great sages are learning that the verse is telling you that there won't be any need. That means that when you come to a stage of clarification, where there's no more spiritual contamination, where a person doesn't have to suffer anymore, when a person's worked out all that they have to go through, the meat has changed, all that it has to change, the flesh, the mind, all the levels have changed correctly and everything's pure, that's what it means that we will be in tune with the spiritual world. So now, what kind of argument is in this Mishnah? The argument is, how long will it take? Understand carefully. It says this. Yerei Kippur says, Yud Beis Chodesh, 12 months. Why? Because it says, V'hoyo midei Chodesh b'chodesho, from one month to another. So the commentaries explain, it means one month to its month. Chodesh b'chodesho means a month to its month, or a month in its month. What that really means is, one month of the year brought through a whole year back to that month. That's what it means. When it says, midei Chodesh b'chodesho, it means by means of one month bringing back to that month. That's how you translate it. Means that it takes a year. That's 12 months. If you start at one particular point and you brought back to that month, that means a year. That's what it is. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Omer, but it's an argument. A Tana, another Tana in the days around Rabbi Akiva's time, he says like this, Mina Pesach v'adates. No, people don't have to suffer in the next world for a year. They only have to suffer from Pesach v'Shavuos. Only 7 weeks, that's all. Shenema, why? Because it says, Midei Shabbos v'Shabbat. Because it says from one Shabbos to the next. Understand this. Hear what's going on here? An argument. It's a very important argument. Very important argument. Will we have to suffer, those of us who don't merit? Clarification before we get there. Will we have to suffer, and people who are there now, do they have to suffer 12 months in that dimension? Is that the only way out? Says Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that it doesn't have to be 12 months, it could be 7 weeks. But that's a small fraction of the time, about a tenth of the time. I hope the Kodesh Baruch Hu Paskin is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. That's what it says. How does he learn it? Because the verse says, from one Shabbos to the next, from one Sabbath, one Shabbat to the next. Now, what's going on exactly? One Shabbat to the next means that a Shabbos will bring you round to a Shabbos again, just like we said. So what does he say that means? That means the Shabbos of Pesach bringing you to the Shabbos of Shavuos. That's what it means. It's 7 weeks, it's not a year. Because, and it's the same verse, by the way. The same verse starts off by saying, and it will be from a month that brings to a month, and a Shabbos that brings to a Shabbos. So Rabbi Akiva learns it means a month to the month means a year. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri learns it means that one Shabbos bringing to the next Shabbos, the Shabbos that causes the next Shabbos, that is the 7 times 7 weeks of Tzvira. That's all that's needed. See if we can try and understand this. There was an argument in the early days of movements that tried to reform Judaism. What we're going to say now has a lot to do with movements that broke away from Torah. Other certain other religions that tried to change certain things, and unfortunately much worse is certain movements within Judaism that tried to change certain things. As I've said before, I wouldn't like to credit them with even saying their names, but people who tried to, as I've remarked before, people who pretend to reform certain things within Judaism, or people who say that they are quite conservative about certain things in Torah. But whatever they call themselves, these are movements that have tried to change certain things in Torah. The source of this, in fact, was a time not far actually from the beginning of Christianity, not far in history from that time, was a time when there was a movement within Judaism that began that was called the movement of the Minim. The Tzdukim and the Baitusim were really the names of these two groups. In English you call them the Sadducees, the Tzdukim, and also another group called the Baitusim. Two breakaway groups. There were two students who were in the Beis Medrash of the generation very close to the time before even the days of Hillel and Shammai, one or two generations before the generation in which the founder of Christianity was a student in one of the Beis Medrash of one of the greatest sages of that generation. And these two students misunderstood something that the Rebbe said. In fact, it was something about the next world, and they broke away. They began a movement of their own. In fact, what happened really was that I think it was Antignos Ish Sochei, he said, he was the teacher, he was the Rebbe, the master, and he said, do not serve your master in order to receive reward. Do not be, this is, you see this in Pirkei Avos, do not serve the master as servants who wish a reward, but rather serve the master for its own sake. That means, you have to be Oved Hashem, you have to serve Hashem because it's right, but not for a reward. And another place it says, the reward will come anyway, but you don't work for the reward. So the two of them heard that there's no reward. Their minds grasped what the Rebbe was saying, you follow, in such a way, they heard their Rebbe saying that you shouldn't work for a reward. They understood him to mean that there is no reward. So they went out and they started teaching that there's no world other than this. There's only this world. There's no dimension of reward, because they heard him say, don't work for a reward. So they understood it to mean, at least their negias, their vested interests, led them to understand or to teach that there's only this and you might as well enjoy this. But don't work for another dimension, there is none. And they started a terrible number of centuries of battle against the Jewish people. A lot of violence took place, and they became this movement who battled against Torah. Now, the Gemara records as follows. Try and understand this. The central argument, there were a number of arguments that the Tzdukim had with the sages of Torah about there. But a classic argument that says it all was an argument as follows. Try and understand this. The argument was, the Torah said that you have to count Sfira Soimer. In fact, it was about Sfira. It was just about this mitzvah of counting from Pesach to Shavuos. It was about this mitzvah that they argued. The Torah says as follows. Now hear well. Usfartim lachem, you should count mimocharat ha-shabbat, mimocharat ha-shabbos, you should count from the day after Shabbos, sheva shabbos, it's 7 complete weeks, right? and you have to count 7 weeks, 49 days, Tisburu Chamishim Yom, you have to count 50 days. So we have a deep tradition in Torah Shebaal Peh that when the Torah says, Mimochras HaShabbos, that you should count from the day after Shabbos, it means the day after Pesach. Why doesn't it say that? Why doesn't it say that? It says the day after Shabbos. So the Torah tradition is, the Gemara, the Mishnah, the Torah Shebaal Peh, we have a deep, deep tradition that what that means is, we start counting from the day after Pesach. Isn't that what we do? The second night of Pesach. The day after Pesach, we start counting Sfiras HaEmet. The Tzukim came along and they said like this. You have to understand, the motivation behind it was, they claimed not to believe in the oral law. You know what makes us Jewish is the oral law. We discussed many times, it's not the written law. There's the Christians also believe in the written law, but they don't look Jewish at all. Yes, many people believe in the written law. Other groups also, they believe in the written law. But it's what it is interpreted to mean. It's what the inner depth of it is. What between the lines tells you that what the lines are saying is what makes you Jewish. And the oral law, Torah Shebaal Peh, is what teaches us what Torah is. And is what Torah is. We live or die on that. That's who we are. The written law is useless without the oral law. Because you can make of it whatever you want. There are many things that you can't make anything of in the written law without the oral law. So the Tzukim came along and they said this. The Rambam in one place explains that actually they wanted to destroy everything. But they were living in a generation where if they would have said that, they would have been decimated and destroyed. So what they did was they said, well, we believe in the Torah, but only the written. The oral is rabbinic opinion, it's human opinion. We understand it's not a human opinion. We understand it's divine opinion manifested through human opinion. It's a very difficult idea. No one's saying it's easy. And the only way a person can understand it is by being in it, and by studying it. But that's what we are. That's who we are, the Torah Shebaal Peh. They came along and said, the written law only. Now, if you have the written law without the oral law, a lot of things look very different. If you read a verse in the Torah that says, and you shall count from the day after Shabbos, and you don't have an oral law that says, this Shabbos means Pesach, as we believe, so then you have to count from Shabbos. So they said you have to count from the Shabbat after Pesach, not the day after Pesach, because it says Shabbos. And you have to count 7 weeks. It means according to them, Shavuos always comes out on a Sunday. Shavuot always comes out on a Sunday because they start counting from the day after Shabbat and they count 49 days and the 50th is... That's what they do. There were times in Jewish history when power was vested in them. There were times in Jewish history where they were the military power, inflicted many casualties on the rest of the Jewish people. There was in fact a time in Jewish history where the sages had no alternative but to fix Pesach every year so it came out on Shabbos. You hear that? There were generations of Jewish history when the sages sighted the moon. They were Mekadesh L'Chodesh, they arranged Pesach so it would always come out on a Shabbos, so that we'd always have to count from the day after Shabbos anyway. You follow? So that there wouldn't be a war. But of course that was manipulating in a way to avoid tragedy. But the point is that they're two completely different traditions. What have we learned? At the beginning of a movement to reform, you have to understand this, it's a very, very deep idea. The beginning of a movement to reform Torah, to take Torah and make it something that's not Torah. We're trying to understand here the wickedness and the evil of these movements that have broken away and have tried to make something else out of Torah through seemingly small details. Try to understand the root of them this evening. It's not our purpose and it's not what we gathered here to try and study things that are not Torah. We want to understand Torah. But this is a reality in the world. Let's see if we can try and, without lowering us the level of discussion, to go into the so-called reasoning, but let's see if we can study the root of these ideas. What's the argument? The argument is whether you count from the day after Pesach, which is called Shabbos, or do you count from literally the day after Shabbos, which is called Shabbos? What is it? So the Gemara says this. Try to understand this argument. The depth of this argument. Oh, it's a fantastic thing to understand. And it cost lies. I mean, they were ready to give lies for this. So the Gemara says, one day in the days of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the great leader of that generation, before the days of Rabbi Akiva, the days he lived through the Roman destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, he one day was attacked by the Tzukim, by these people, the Minim. The Gemara calls them Minim. Min means, loosely translated, it means a denier, an atheist. Min actually means a species, that's what it literally means. It means somebody who's not even counted as an individual, just a group. Like a natural biological organism, not someone with transcendence. That's how we refer to them. Once they argued with him and tried to convince him that the sphera that we're in now should be counted from the day after Shabbos and not from the day after Pesach, as the old tradition says. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said to them, what is your reasoning according to you? Why do we count, according to you, why do we count from the day after Shabbos? What's the reason? What's your reason? So no one could answer him. And then it says, an old man got up, one of these people who thought in this crooked way. There was one man, Shehayim Afatpet Lifnei Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, it says, he's got up and stammered out and stumbled out in his false logic. He got up and he said in front of it, he said like this. He said, Moshe Rabbeinu Oyev Yisrael Hoyo. That Moses was a lover of the Jewish people. Listen to the explanation that he gave. Moses was a lover of the Jewish people. And therefore, he fixed it in the Torah that the counting should be from the day after Shabbos. Why? So that Shabbos would always fall out on a Sunday, and we'd have 2 days of Yom Tov together. You hear that? Because one day is not enough. Yes? Just one day of Yom Tov. So he made it that it would fall back to back with the Shabbos. And so that there'd be 2 days. That is enjoyable. Oinek, that means a person could enjoy his other weekend. It's the origin of the concept of weekend. It's a Torah version of a long weekend. That's what his explanation was. Understand this. Moshe Rabbeinu Oyev Yisrael, that Moses was a lover of the Jewish people, and because he loved us, he wanted to make things nice for us, and so instead of counting in such a way that Shabbos would fall out in the middle of the week, he wanted to count it in such a way that it would fall out back to back with Shabbos, and we'd have a... So Rabbi Yochanan answered him as follows. Shaitem Shoel, I think I want to say Shaitem Shoel, which means fool in the world. Fool of the world. How do you say that? If Moshe Rabbeinu loved the Jewish people, why did he delay them for 40 years in the desert? If he loved the Jewish people the way you say, and all, the whole thing was geared towards a calculation that would come out that give us a pleasant Yom Tov, why did he keep us wandering in the desert for 40 years, an agonizing experience? That's the argument. Now, let's see if we can try and understand this. You know, there's nothing in the Gemara that's humorous or extravagant or nonsense, even if the Tzuki talks nonsense, but the Gemara wouldn't quote words of nonsense. I mean, these words, this argument is very, very deep. Let's see if we can try and trace the depth of this amazing argument and get back to where we began. See, the idea of counting, I'm trying to understand now. The idea of counting, what is this mitzvah in the first place, exactly? What is this idea that you count the days? What exactly is it? We tried to explain last time we met that it's not the idea of ticking off the days until you get to the place you hope to get. Yes? There's certainly that included in it. But as we noted last time, if you count the days to get to a certain point, you count backwards, you don't count forwards. If you're counting to get to a certain place, your mind works in such a way that you want to know how many days are left. You would count 49, only 48 days left, only 47 days. That's how you count towards something that you anticipate with great expectation or pleasure. When you count 1 and 2 and 3, you're not counting towards, you're counting away from. You're counting what you've built already, not where you're going to. And in fact, we call it Sfiras HaOmer, counting of the Omer. The Omer was a sacrifice that was brought on Pesach, not on Shavuos. So we're counting from the place we left. As we tried to explain last time, the idea is that you're building something. When you've built something, you count that way. I've built 1, I've built 2, I've built 3. You count the number of elements that you built in the Neshama. That's what you're counting. When you've built all the elements you have to build, then you get where you're going. The idea is, and we're not ticking off the days in expectation. Because if you tick off the days in expectation, you won't get there. The only way you can get to Shavuos is by counting the days in terms of building the days. That gets you there. The reason you end up at a high point is because you've built all the layers that take you there. Mimela, automatically you get to the high point. You follow? It's not like the high point's there, and you coast through time marking off how long there is left. That's not how you won't get there. The idea of sphere is a responsibility. The idea is that what happens is you have to build those elements to get there. Where do we see this? Where are you getting, first of all, to Kedusha, to transcend it? Now, the Gemara says if a person is lost in the desert, what would you do if you got lost in the desert, you were walking through the desert and you forgot which day of the week it is? So you might say, what's the problem? The problem is, what about Shabbos? That's the problem. What happens when you're walking through the desert and you can't remember what day of the week it is? So the Gemara says that what you do is, you count 6 days and you Makadosh the seventh in that Shabbos. That's what you do. How can you do that? We know that Shabbos is a thing that's fixed in the world. It's not something you've got to just count seven. Some sort of device, what is this? To just remind you that, you know, the Kabbalistic understanding is not like that. Is that the idea of Shabbos is what you count to. If you count 6 days, of course if you're in the world you can't do that. But if you're in another world, if you're in the desert always means a place where there's no organized system. That means you are the system. There's nothing there that defines time. You're in a raw world that hasn't been defined. So what you do is you count the six, and once you count the six, the seventh is Shabbos. The borderline of transcendence comes because you count the elements. Just understand this, we're not counting the worst thing, the biggest barrier to breakthrough. The work we have to do is sitting. The biggest barrier to breakthrough is the idea that counting is just numbering things. It's in English, in a non-spiritual world, like a Western world that we live in, our concept of counting, I'm trying to understand this, our concept of counting is in our numbering. You know how many things you have? When do we use the concept of counting? To see how much you have of something. You want to know if you've got enough to buy whatever it is. So you count how much you have. Right? Or you want to know if you fulfill the requirements, so you count it. That's not counting. That's just a technical... Let's put another way. That kind of counting doesn't get you any place. That kind of counting is endless. There's no end to the numbers that you could count. That's not the mitzvah of Sphira. The idea of Sphira is to put a transcendent thing into being, to bring a transcendent dimension into being by counting the non-transcendent elements. That means by building the elements of the pathway that take you there, by building those elements until they complete. What happens is when you complete them, you find yourself in another world. That's not counting. That's not the English, the Western idea of just counting numbers. But for counting 49 won't get you into another world. Counting 49 million won't get you into another world. The concept is counting the elements of reality means building the elements of reality. There are only 49 elements that we talked about before. The 49 elements of reality are really the 7 elements of the 7 dimensions of reality. See if we can try to understand this idea. It's almost impossible if you think in Western terms. Try and break out of it. You know, the word mispa, sfa, to count, sfira, sfira ta'omi, that word means to put a border to something. Sfar in Hebrew means a border. Araya sfar in Hebrew means the border towers. Those on an edge. That means defining packages or making limitations or making edges. On the contrary, it's to appreciate and bring into focus the finite dimensions is the only way to get to the infinite, to transcend it. Now, if you want to understand this even more deeply, you know that another word for counting in Hebrew is limnot. Mone. Right? Mone shvachon, let's say. Mone means to count. But the word mone in Hebrew means to appoint. You know that? To appoint someone to a post is the same word. The inner depth of this is that the process of counting is putting things in their place so that they build what they have to build. Counting is not counting the bricks in a building. It's putting the bricks there. You know, the deepest way I know of putting this across is that during Sphira, it's allowed to talk about these things, even though normally they remain hidden. You know that the deepest building blocks of the universe, you know that there are 10 mystical dimensions. There's 7 of them that are revealed. The mystical dimensions that build the world, you know what they're called? We never don't like to use these words even. They're called Sphirot. You know that? In English, if you read books, in English they talk about the mystical things. If you're interested in it, you'll see they talk about the emanations. The mystical emanations. Or some books they call them the mystical spheres. They're not emanations and they're not spheres. They're spirit. A sphere means accounting. You hear that? The 10 mystical dimensions, or the 7 revealed mystical dimensions that create the world, that's spheres only, that's sphera. Each of them is called a sphera, which means accounting. In other words, these 10 mystical dimensions that build the world, that all the Kabbalists talk about, that anybody who dabbles in these things, talks about, the name given to these elements are the elements of counting. They're the action of counting. That's what builds reality. What happens when you build reality? You get to a dimension, you know, it says, there's a source in Chazal that says that there are 7 notes in a musical scale. Because reality is built on 7. There are 7 notes. Music is not because you have a meshing, let's say, or a companion, the word, music is not a conglomeration of sound, it's the harmony of definite sound. Music, you hear that? To make music, you don't take a tone generator and generate all the frequencies between the lowest notes and the highest notes. That's not music, that's noise. Music is specific notes across the spectrum of sound. There's an infinite number of elements, of frequencies in the spectrum from one note on the scale to the octave above it. Are you with me? But what makes music is just 7 points along, the eighth is the same as the first. It's just 7 definite points. You hear what's going on? You don't run through the sequence. You count off one and you focus on it and bring it into sharp focus. The next one is brought into focus. The next, and then you have music. What happens when you get there? So then you have the beauty of music. You have all, as they, there's a place in Chazal that says that the harp that's used to play music has seven strings. The harp that was used in the Beis HaMikdash in the temple had eight strings. Had eight notes. It had another note that you couldn't hear outside. There was an eighth note that you couldn't hear. Imagine if you could hear music. And it says when the Mashiach comes in the Messianic age, the harp will have ten. All ten mystical spheres will be revealed that have a note that will be represented by them in the world. You'll hear music based on a scale of ten notes, three of which you've never heard before. Not that they haven't discovered them in terms of the frequency. Not that you go home and plunk it out on the piano. Yes, and you come up with a messianic tune. The idea is that there'll be three notes revealed in the world that no human's ever heard before. The only time they've ever been heard is the eighth of them was heard in the Beis HaMikdash. If you ever went into the temple, you would hear music that was impossible for the human ear to hear any place, because the place where ten miracles were occurring all the time. You could hear music when the Levim played, when they sang and played, they played music that had eight notes. There was an eighth note to the scale. Eighth is always transcendence. Eighth is always outside the natural physical world. That's why Bris Miller's on the eighth day, because it's taking the body and transcending it. That's why Hanukkah's 8 days, which is a miracle. The miraculous dimension is always the eighth. That which can't be experienced in the world. In a special place like a Beis HaMikdash it could be. But in the final world, when the world reaches its perfection, when even the flesh has revealed the higher lights, there'll be 10 notes to be heard. But that's only because the counting gets you there. Because each note's brought into focus. Exactly what it has to be. Harmonizing exactly the way it has to be. It's going through that exercise. Yet music is not. Music is not ticking off the notes till you get to the final note. That's not music. Anybody understands that? Music is that each note does what it does, and that's what builds the music. Gets you to the final note or chord. But it's the process that builds. Very hard to transfer this in words. Anybody understands anything about music knows that what you hear when you listen to music is not just so many sounds. If there's one field that can be apprehended, appreciated in the world, where the total, the sum, is more than the parts, then it's music. Music is not an experience of listening to certain finite notes. Yes? Each note in its place. All you get then is you hear a lot of notes. Music is the fact that the notes form some... Are we together? Is anybody out there with me? Music is the experience that when all the finite bits and pieces, each one on its own having no transcendence at all, are put together correctly, so you have something completely different than what the elements are. Complete transcendence. I mean, this is a puny example, because this itself is in the physical world. But if you understand music well, that's why the word for music, nagain, which means a melody, means the 50th level of the garden. Nun gan, the 50th level of the garden. And of course it begins and ends with the same letter, because it's a continuous spiral. And of course 50, that's what it is. Of course the word for music has 50. Because there's 7 shades of 7 notes that are all brought out that take you to a 50th, not just a 49. If somebody would play you a symphony, some very, very deep musical experience, and they play the notes to you one at a time. Today one note, the next day another note, the next day another note. So you would, it's only when they count it properly, that's what counting means. When they count it correctly, when the spirit in them, the spirits, those mystical dimensions are brought by the harmony into action, what then happens is automatically is a transcendence. You don't do that transcendence, you can't do it, it's a gift. All you do is hit the notes that have to be hit. You count the notes the way they have to be counted. If the right notes are hit at the right time, in the right harmony, what amazes you is that comes out of it, the transcendent experience. The words can't be said any better than that. You either understand it or you don't. That's what Sfiras HaOmer is. Sfiras HaOmer is counting through the elements of reality. It's the message, it's the homework exercise of counting through the elements of reality to reach a transcendent reality that's called Torah. The name Shavuos means weeks. But it couldn't be more obvious. The name Shavuos is weeks. It's called Shavuos. Weeks. Shavuos should be called, yes, now if you speak English it's called Pentecost. Now I'll see what that means. But the word itself, Shavuos, means weeks. If you understand what you're talking about, what you've just said is that you got there because of the weeks that were counted. Shavuos should be called something else. Shavuos should be called Torah, or Simchas Torah should be called Torah. But Shavuos is called weeks. The pshat in it, the mystics always say, is that 9 steps, always, are human work. The 10th is a gift. Or 7, and the 8th is a gift. Or 6 are work, and the 7th is a gift. But whatever the transcendent level is, the real 8th level, which is really what the 50th is, instead of going to 8 after 7, you go to 50 after 49, that's just the completeness of it. The real 8th level is something that you can't build yourself. You can't count that note. Are we together? You can't do that. You can't play that note. You can play the seven notes. You can't play an eighth note. But if you play the seven correctly, you hear the eighth note. In fact, that's why you're doing it. The only reason you're doing the seven is to hear that eighth come out of it. That's why you do it. That's what evokes such deep feelings in a person. That's how we don't count the 50th. We count 7 weeks. We count seven times seven. Five out completely. We count one after another, seven times seven. What happens? You reach Shavuos. You can't count Shavuos. You can't do it. It gets given to you as a gift. So what do we see from all this? We see that the experience of counting is to make us into something different that the counting does. We take the finite elements of our own being, the seven elements of our personalities, as we discussed here before, the seven elements that make up the world, and we count them, but that means building them. We're building the music of the Spirit. We're not picking off days or piling up numbers, like a Western concept of counting. We're building the elements, the building blocks of personality, we're building them in such a harmony that when they all build correctly, the music starts to play. You hear the music, are the music. The reason it's a puny analogy is because what happens when you put the elements of music together, you hear the music. What happens in Torah, when you put the elements of the finite together, you become Torah. You don't hear the music, you don't hear Torah, you become Torah. The greatest proof of that is that as we count, we make it happen. What happens? The nature of Torah is that if a person uses physicality correctly, the physical elements of your body and your mind, you build yourself in Torah correctly, what happens is you suddenly melt, mesh, merge into a world that is Torah. When you become that world, what happens is you can create the physical. You know that? It says that every Jew that stood at Sinai, every Jew stood at Sinai, was able to create the whole world from any verse in Chumash. You hear that? When the Jews stood at Sinai, and Hashem gave the Torah, so it says that from the Torah that they received at Sinai, any man, any individual standing there, could have created the whole universe, not from the whole Torah, just from one verse. One element of Torah was so potent that they could... What do you see from this? You understand that the receiving of Torah, that doesn't mean receiving it. That doesn't mean that it sort of is apparent to you. Receiving of Torah means that it becomes part of you. You become part of it. It lifts you to the level. That gift of the 10th level is not something that's an added detail that gets dropped in. That 10th level is where the lights come on, but the lights are you. You are the music at that level. If you want a hint, a clue to this, it said that there was a Navi, there was a prophet. King called him in and needed a Nebuah. But he had anger within him and he wasn't able to prophesy. It's only out of Simcha, it's only out of happiness that you can reach transcendence. As if you're gloomy, you cannot reach transcendence. In fact, there's some places where it calls Shavuos the Simcha of Torah, the happiness of Torah. That's how it's called. Only if you are elated can you get into the higher world. So he asked the prophet, he asked the Navi to listen well now. After what we said this evening, it should be apparent. You read these words before understanding, you see it's empty. But what we said this evening, it should be, I hope a little light will come on. The king asked him to say his prophecy, and he couldn't prophesy, he couldn't say the word. So he asked them to bring musicians. He asked for music. You hear this? Vahaya kenagen amenagen. And when the musician started playing, it came out. Now listen to the words. Vahaya kenagen hamenagen. Which means like this, loosely translated, if you look it up in a Tanakh, it says, and when the musician played, Vahaya, and it came to be, ke when nagen. The playing hamenagen of the musician. When that happened, but the words don't mean that. Listen carefully. Vahaya kenagen hamenagen. When the musician became the music. That's what the words mean. When the menagen was kenagen, like the music, that's when the prophecy came out. That's what prophecy is. If the musician wouldn't have become the music, he wouldn't have raised him to level. You follow? Didn't switch on a... Not that top 10. The real 10. And when that happened, he was transported to a level where Nebuah came out. And we have a deep tradition that Chacham is Aduf Minavi. We have a deep tradition that a sage, a Torah sage, is higher than the channel. But a Chacham, a wise man, a person who is wise in Torah, a person who is Torah, is superior to that because he is the Nebuah. Not like a prophet who is a channel. So he becomes a passive channel and through him flows the higher wisdom. But a person who is a Chacham, that's a person who is life itself. He is that source. He is the source of Nebuah. That's why it says Chacham Adof Minavi. He's wiser, greater, preferable than a prophet. We've seen together before many examples of how a person who's absorbed what Torah is becomes a completely different kind of individual. It becomes an individual that things can be done in the world. The world looks different because of his Torah. Miracles. There was a generation when people imbued with Torah could do physical, literally do miracles at any time. They were able, through the counting correctly, the counting of physical elements done correctly, to get to a level that's beyond counting. The way Torah is put into the world shapes the world. The remarkable thing is that Torah, that is the, it says Hashem looked into the Torah and created the world, means that there was a transcendent dimension called Torah. Hashem looked into that, extracted out of that the core of what it was, and then built the world, and it looks the same way. But what's remarkable is that you do that, you can do that too. If you do Torah like that, you can create like that too. Literally, the only limitation is your intention and your death and desire. Once we discussed together, I'll give you one example. Don't wish to take all evening. Once you could look up the cassette that we discussed many examples of this. I'll just share one with you to try and bring the point up. Once it happened in the days of the Chazon Ish. I mean, I'm extracting one story from that set which I once conveyed to you to try and illustrate the depth of the Torah mind. That when the Torah mind comes up with an idea and puts it out into the world as Torah, the world changes itself. Literally changes itself. Because Torah is the cause of the world. And Torah Shebaal Zeh, the oral law that we are, what the sages of Torah are, that's the Torah that shapes the world. Not what was given at Sinai in words, but what's in the hearts and minds of the sages of Torah Shebaal Zeh, of the oral law, that's what forms the world. One beautiful story that comes to mind, just one tiny detail, but was a story that happened to a certain man in the days of the Chazon Ish. There was a man who had a lesion on his lung. He had a illness, certain illness in his lung. Very beautiful story, worth knowing. True story. This problem was a very dangerous situation, and the doctors, he lived in Israel, it must have been the early 1950s, he lived in Israel. The local doctors told him that there was no hope, they couldn't help him. But if he left Israel and he went to a certain place, he went to Europe, certain clinic in Switzerland, some place, wherever it was, then maybe there was some kind of treatment that might do him some good. Maybe he should go there, or the air there, or the treatment, whatever it was. So the man came to the Chazon Ish, great sage, leader of his generation, and he said to him, look, the doctors here in Israel say that they can't help me, and I have no chance. But if I leave and I go to Europe, then I could survive. What should I do? The Chazon Ish said, on no account leave the country. So he said to him, stay here. He said to him, if you leave, you're finished. If you stay here, you have a chance. Exactly the opposite. So the man stayed, and he got better. He was fine. So people came to the Chazon Ish afterwards, and they said, Rebbe, what kind of prophet are you? How did you know that the man had to stay here? What made you say that? He said, I'm not a prophet. It says it in the Shulchan Aruch. He says, it says it in the code of Jewish law. And he showed him a place which says the following thing. In the laws of kashrus, of whether an animal is kosher or not. So you hear the story, very beautiful. In the laws of whether an animal is kosher or not. So there's a discussion in the Gemara about a certain problem on the lung. Yes? And this problem on the lung is a debate between two opinions about whether such an animal is kosher. In other words, if an animal is shechted and you examine the lung and you find this particular problem, as you well know, if the lungs are glut, what's called glut, completely smooth, then there's no problem. Some lesions, some injuries, and problems, growths on the lung, make the animal unkosher. But there are some that are debatable. And this particular one is a particular medical problem on the lung that's debatable. And there are two opinions about it. Now the Chazon Ish said that when this man came to me and described what the doctor said was wrong with him, I recognized it as exactly the same problem that the Gemara talks about as this particular problem in the lung. And then I said to myself like this, that it just so happens that the argument is brought down in Halacha, and the Shulchan Aruch that actually talks about it, Lamaisa, practically, we have two opinions. The Beis Yosef, which is the Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, the great Sephardi authority who lived in Sfat in the 1500s, he rules that it's kosher. He rules that this animal, if you have this problem, it's got a lung, it's kosher, you can eat it. And the Ramo, the great Ashkenazi authority whom we Ashkenazim follow, right? He rules that it's trite. You may not eat the animal. That's what he says. Said the Chazon Ish like this. What does it mean if a thing's trite? What does it mean if an animal's trite? You know what it means? It means that if you find a problem in one of the organs, like on the lung, that means that the animal could not live a year. You see, what we define as being kosher or trite is that if there's a lesion, some problem in one of the organs, and it would be lethal, that means the animal's dying, so then it's trite. It means the animal was going to die anyway. It wasn't shechted, it was dying. But if the animal could live with this problem, a year or more, let's say, then it's not a dying animal, then it's kosher. In other words, if the Beis Yosef rules that the animal's trite, that means that this is a lethal lesion, that this animal would have died within a year. And if there are more rules that the animal's kosher, it means in his opinion, this medical problem is not lethal, the animal could live for more than a year. Chebachazmesh. Now, it just so happens that in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, the overriding halachic authority is the Beis Yosef. He's the Moed Asra. In the general tradition that we follow in Israel, we follow the Beis Yosef. In Europe, we follow the Ramon. He's the final authority for halachic matters in Europe. So I said to myself like this. If you stay in Israel, where the opinion of the Beis Yosef holds sway, over here, this is not a lethal lesion. Over here, you can live with it. But if you go to Europe, where the Ramon's opinion holds sway, you haven't got a chance there. You have to die there. Because if the Ramon says this animal's trafe, he's saying that this is a lethal problem. And if the Ramon says it's lethal. Even at the same time as in another place, it's not. But that's because the Beis Yosef says it's not. The whole of Israel, the reality, the way organisms behave, the way humans and animals are, whether illnesses behave this way or that way, waits to hear what the Ramon says and what the Beis Yosef says. If the Beis Yosef says that it's trafe, an animal hasn't a chance. Yes? So I thought to myself, it's not prophecy. It's halacha. It's halacha. If you go off to Europe, yes, you can't possibly survive if you stay here. Understand, this is not a joke. This is the concept is that the Torah idea is that when a man of Torah paskins, that means when he says something in the halacha, it means that the physical world changes the shape to that form. It literally becomes that. It's not a description. Torah is not a description of reality. It's a creation of reality. Torah is the genes that creates reality. Science and Western wisdom is a description of reality. The world is, and we describe it. Yes? We'll formulate the theory, and we'll see if the facts fit, and we'll describe reality. Torah is not a description. Torah is the primary cause of reality. How do you do that? By taking reality and building it. By taking the elements of who you are as a personality, bringing into focus each musical note in your personality in perfect harmony, putting them together till the music comes out, and you become the music. You become Torah, you become a transcendent entity. You hear the music, you become the music. You create the world. That's the Torah idea of counting. That's what counts. Not ticking off the date. The sentimental wishing for a date in the future. Or turning another page in the calendar. That's not the idea of counting. The idea is spirit. That means building the mystical dimensions that build reality, actually building them and in the end becoming them because you built them. Because you put them together. Let's try to go back and answer some of the things we started with in the next few minutes and see if we can understand. What was this idea of reforming Torah? What was this wicked intention? What was this wickedness that these people... What was the wickedness of these people? Maybe somebody could boss me a sidur. Maybe if you could boss me an article. What was the intention of these people, who came to... what was the wickedness of these people who came to try and change things and convert things? Listen well. Their understanding of the world is that the world is a physical place. The world's physical. The world's a literal, finite, physical place. That's not the Torah idea. The Torah idea is that those are only the building blocks that build transcendence. But the idea of this reforming of things was that the world's physical and we fit into it. The Torah idea is that the world's physical and we lift it out of itself. Their idea is that we fit into normality. So understand this carefully. What did he say? He said that we count, the Tzadokim say, we count from, when the Torah says Shabbos, we count from Shabbos. You know why? Because you can't change reality. You hear that? If the Torah says you count from Shabbos, what are you talking about? You know what it says? You know what the Pasuk says? Listen to this. Count for yourselves from the day after Shabbos and make Shabbos. Right? Sheva, you have to count 7 weeks. That means you have to make, do you know, the halacha is that when you count Sfira, you start from a Shabbos, a point called Shabbos. It's not Shabbos, it's Pesach. It's any day that we say. But you count from there, you get from there to a Shabbos, the seventh of seven, and in between it's also Shabbos. Do you know there are halachic opinions that during the time you count the Sfira, you have to behave like it's Shabbos? Do you know that? There are halachic opinions that from nightfall until the time it's taken you to count Sfira, so you shouldn't do any work. I'm not saying we hold like that, and how long it is, I'm not sure. But there are halachic opinions that you're forming a Shabbos by counting. Which means that you're taking a point called Shabbos, you're building a thing called Shabbos, and you're reaching a place called Shabbos. That's what it is. So the Stuki said, how can you do that? Shabbos is Kriya V'Kaima. Shabbos is in the world. Shabbos is a certain day, and it runs from Shabbos to Shabbos. You can't, what are you Jews doing? Start counting a day, you pick a day in the week, you first of all call it Shabbos, it's not called Shabbos, it's called Pesach, you call it Shabbos, and then you start counting, and now you say you've got a whole new system? That's crazy. The world speaks, you can't override it. Can you hear what's going on here? You fit into the world. So we count from a Shabbos that is. And where do we get to? Listen carefully. Why do we do this? What's the underlying motivation? So we can have a nice holiday at the end. The idea of Torah, listen well, This is behind all reform ideas. All ideas that reform Torah and change Torah. The motivation behind it all is not to change details and not just to make things easier. It's to make everything for me and not me for it. The idea of being a Jew is to be for the world, to be for Hashem. The idea of being something other than that is to take the world and make it be for me. In all reform elements, you'll see this idea. In everything that ever changed Torah, you'll see it. I don't want to be too explicit about it, but if you think about it, you'll see that one of the major breakaways from Torah holds that Hashem sacrifices His dearest things for us. Is that right? Are you with me? Huh? We sacrifice everything for Hashem. Are you together? I don't want to say too much. How does Yiddishkeit begin? With a man who sacrificed his son for Hashem. Huh? But there are other systems that say, oh no, that's not the way it is. It's the other way around. Are you with me? What's the idea? Who's for who over here? Are you here for him? Are you here to reach a transcendence where you become that? You become that transcendence? You're here only for that? Or do you slip that down to where you are to be for you? There's a physical reality, you fit into that and take advantage of it, and you go along with the natural until you get to something nice and natural at the end. And you enjoy it. That's what it is. Can you hear the argument here? I think one doesn't quote words of nonsense. If that is, and by the way, you have to hear this well, why did he say that Moshe Rabbeinu loved the Jewish people? How did he explain it? He said, Moshe Rabbeinu, Oyev Yisrael Hoyo, that Moses was a lover of the Jewish people. Why didn't he say Hashem? Why didn't he go to the divine source? Why did he stop at it intermediately? Again, I don't want to be too explicit, but if you know anything about systems that are broken away from Torah, you'll see that they never go to the source. Why did he say? I mean, even the Tzedukim said that Hashem gave the Torah. They didn't deny that. They had the written law. They said that Hashem himself gave the written law. It was given by Hashem at Sinai. So why didn't he say that Hashem, who loved the Jewish people, gave them 2 days of holiday instead of one? Why did he start at the level of Moshe Rabbeinu? Can you feel what's going on here? In every word that he's saying is this evil. Moshe Rabbeinu, the leader of the Jewish people, never mind the divine source. The leader of the Jewish people, who sort of is responsible for this. He just cuts off the head, the source. He's the one who loved us so much, he wanted to give us a nice holiday. So he took the physical reality and gave us part of the physical. Rabbi Yochanan answers him, if Moshe Rabbeinu loved us that much, why did he take us 40 years in the desert? You know what that means? The Kabbalists say that 40 years in the desert is 40 days of conception. You know, it says that it takes 40 days for the fetus to be formed. You know that? The Gemara says that until then it's water. By the way, medically that's confirmed. On the 40th day, all the organs are in place and recognizable. You know that? Until then, buds are being formed, and on that day, all the details are formed. Exactly. Exactly. A very interesting atlas of intrauterine development by an English gynecologist who live pictures of the fetus inside the womb day by day, and you actually see it. 40 days for the fetus to be formed fully. And because of what the Jews did, it says, Yom Lashana, Yom Lashana. 1 year for a day, 1 year for a day. That means, in order to be formed as the Jewish people, the 40 days of formation of a child will be 40 years for the formation of a nation. 40 years in the desert will form them, which means 40 years will form them as a transcendent people. You'll spend 40 years in the desert, not because he loved us so much, he wanted to give us a nice holiday. So that's not the process. The process is there's a birth process. There's a 40-stage process of all the pieces being put together in such a way that you reach a transcendence, you reach a whole new existence. What that new existence? Being able to go into the land of Israel, becoming a Jewish people, being a completely transcendent people. The debate here, that seems to be a petty debate about whether the Torah means Shabbos and 7 weeks and 2 days holiday, or whether Shabbos means from Pesach and counting 49. The debate here in its depth is the world here for you? Is the divine level, when you prepare to relate to it, here for you? So you can fit in and enjoy what's here and be part of the finite system? Or are you here for it, to blend into it, to build it, build yourself in it, blend into it and become transcendent? Who's here for who? Let's try and answer the questions we started with. Rabbi Akiva says 12 months in Gehenna. Yes, if a person behaves negatively, all his life he spends only generating evil, he must spend 12 months in the next world, in the next dimension, until it's all wiped out. What does that mean? 12 months. It means one whole cycle. There's no other way, according to Ezekiel. The only way you can correct everything that you did wrong is if you go through the whole cycle again. A year is a completion. You know, the word shana means to do it again. Shana means shani, a second time. It means completely through a whole cycle, which keeps repeating itself. That means if you want to correct what you've done, you must live through a lifetime. The minimal unit of a lifetime is one cycle. So you must go through a whole cycle to correct it. Says Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Mipesach v'adateres. From Pesach to Shavuos is enough. You know why? Because it says Midei Shabbos v'Shabbat. Isn't that beautiful? The Kibbutz says like this. The pasuk says Midei Chodesh v'Chodshoy. From one month to the next is what a Rosh needs in Gehenna. Until that month generates the next month in the cycle, in a natural system, if he goes through the natural system, so then he'll be cleansed, he'll be perfected. Says Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri, you don't have to do that. Since we are transcendent people, if you count correctly, you can do it from Pesach to Shavuos. You don't need the natural system. You can do it through the natural, he doesn't argue with it. But you don't have to do it that way. If you live at a transcendent level, you can make it all yourself. You don't have to wait until it's done to you. You can do it to the world. If you wait for a natural cycle, you have to wait for the whole natural cycle to be done automatically. But if you want to reach a level of transcendence, that's called Shabbos. You create the dimension called Shabbos. You count from Shabbos to Shabbos and make a Shabbos in between. If you do, you know what's going on here? It means, according to this Mishnah, if you count correctly, it means you can save people suffering in the next dimension. That's what comes out of a halacha. If you know somebody who's not here, those people in another dimension. So what's going on here is that if you count correctly, you can change that. Change it completely. Instead of having to go through the torture of a year, you could build a transcendent level where it only has to last 7 weeks. Because the reality of what's here and in the next world is dependent on you. It's not dependent on a natural cycle that we're subservient to. It's subservient to us, this world and the next. That's the argument. And the question we began with in the beginning, you see, the idea is to build time until it's beyond time. That's the idea. To build time. You know, what's remarkable is that whenever we talk about the minyan, these people who reformed things, try to make Judaism a finite, try to make Torah a finite organism instead of a transcendent and infinite organism. These people, how do they always do it? They do it by making time natural. You know that? Isn't that what we're saying? Don't make time transcendent. You can't play around and manipulate time. You can't make a new Shabbos and count your own and create your own. You fit in with the natural. That's the last thing we want, is to be natural. We're not a natural people, we're supernatural people. They want to make us natural. That's the evil of what they're doing. Not an argument about which date, which page on the calendar you turn today, that's irrelevant. The question is, are we transcendent or are we natural? They want time to be natural. We want time to be supernatural. You know, there's a broken Shemona Esrei, it's an amazing thing. You say this 3 times a day. V'lamal shinim. For these evil-minded individuals who try to destroy the Jewish people. The broken is actually called Birkas Aminim. If you look in the Siddur, like this one, for example, where it has the words V'lamal shinim al tisikva, for these evil-minded individuals who try and destroy us, let there be no hope. Right? A remarkable, sharp, negative brocha. But above it, the heading, it's called Birkas Aminim. The brocha of these minim, these people who try to break down Torah. Their name isn't even mentioned in the brocha. In other words, the way we try and eliminate them so forcibly, we don't even say their name. The brocha that we ask Hashem to wipe them out, we do it without even saying their name. We don't even be guilty, you follow, of even mentioning in Shmoneh Esrei their name. Not even that amount of existence we want them to have, this evil idea in the world. So we refer to them by other names. But when we say the brocha, you ever hear a brocha like this? Listen to the words carefully. There should be no hope for them. All evil in the world, this whole system we're talking about, all evil in the world, should disappear in a moment. Karega means instantaneously, immediately, right now. And all your enemies, Hashem, all your enemies should be cut off fast, put the word in there fast. Vazedim, and the deliberately evil-minded individuals who try to break down spirituality, Mehera, fast. Ta'aker, Saber, Smager, Sachnir, Bimra. They should be uprooted and smashed and brought low. Bimhera, Biyomen, immediately in our day. You hear that? There are 4 words here for now. In 3 lines, the Brocha manages to incorporate 4 words that mean fast. Karega, Toive, means instantaneously. Kolavecha, Mehera, Yikareisu, fast it should happen. Vazedim, Mehera, Saker, they should be uprooted fast. And finally, Bimhera, Biyomen, immediately in our day. 4 different words that it should have. There's no other place that I know of in anything that we do where we speak to Hashem this way. We want Him to do it. The point is not that we want Him to do it fast as opposed to slowly. We want Him to do it. We want Him to bring, what we're saying here is, we want to bring transcendence. We want to bring that thing that is beyond time. When we ask Hashem, we also say, if you notice that, when we ask for the Messianic redemption, we ask Hashem to do it fast. That Hashem should bring the redemption, He should bring it speedily. Again, it's not just a sentimental hope, it should happen soon. It means that speed, it means defeating the finite nature of time. That's what we're asking for. But when it comes for breaking down the element that tries to oppose us in the world, to manage to fit in 3 lines, 4 words, that mean that it should be done fast. Obviously, it doesn't mean fast, it means it should be done at a transcendent level. And with this, maybe we can answer the question we began with, and we'll leave it at that. The question we started with was, how can the Ramban say that counting the Omer is not a mitzvah that's caused by time? Can you begin to hear it? The Ramban says that when you count the Omer, isn't it beautiful to understand a little word of Torah, just one word of Torah, one idea? The Ramban says that we have a mitzvah, a positive mitzvah to count the Omer. It starts the day after Pesach, yes, and it defines time and it reaches time. Says the Ramban, it's got nothing to do with time. This mitzvah is not caused by time. You hear that? After what we said this evening, you begin to understand. This is not a mitzvah that's caused by time. This is a mitzvah that causes time. You hear it? This is not a mitzvah that's caused by time. A mitzvah that's caused by time means that there's a natural sequence in the world. When you click into a certain phase, now you have to do a certain mitzvah. The time causes the mitzvah. You're a clock. You're going along a cycle. When that time comes, you must now respond this way. So you're responding. Okay, you're doing spiritual things. But you're responding. That's not the Jewish thing. What the Ramban is saying, this is not a mitzvah esay shazman groma. This is a mitzvah esay shegroma hazman. This is a mitzvah that causes time, another kind of time. On the contrary, exactly the opposite. This is not something that you do in response to time. This is something that you do outside of time. And you build the time. You build that system which is called time, which is called Shavuos, which is called the weeks, which is called that idea of reaching transcendence. That's the idea. What we have to try and take home, the message we have to try and take home, what we diving for, what we have to be zeichet to, what a person has to be sensitive to, is the idea that we don't fit into the natural. That's not being Jewish. A person who fits into the natural is meat. That's basar. A person who fits into the natural, so you'll thrive like meat and disintegrate like meat. That's not what the Jewish people. What we're supposed to be here for is not the basar, which means meat, which is basar, surcha, rima, meat and decomposition and worms. That's not the idea. The idea is that we can be able to say, Mitzvah Hashem, we should be able to put the neshama into that flesh, to the extent that we'll be able to say, Midei Chodesh B'Chodesho, that it should be from one month to the next, Umidei Shabbos B'Shabbat, and it should be from one Shabbos that causes the next Shabbos. It should be that system of counting the natural world in such a way that we build it, that we should be able to end by saying, Vol Kol Basar Nishtachavos Lefana, that all flesh should be able to become a part of it.